Of course, many of you are familiar with Newton's third law, which is that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. As it is in nature and science, so it sometimes is in human relationships. Our actions often have some kind of equal and possibly even opposite reaction. In today's story from Luke, I think that Newton's third law is well on display. Jesus' action, teaching in his hometown in Nazareth, results in an equal and opposite reaction. Hearers becoming so enraged that they want to kill Jesus. The arc of this story started well. Jesus came home to Nazareth, where his ever-growing reputation has preceded him. He goes to the synagogue to read from the scroll, as was his custom. He reads strong words from Isaiah and tells the people that today the scripture has been fulfilled in their hearing. At first, they're quite proud of their hometown boy, but then a note of discord creeps in. "Isn't this Joseph's son?" they begin to whisper, and not in the good way. It's not that they remember the naughty little boy that Jesus maybe had been, or the ways he might have rebelled as a teenager. No. They cast aspersions upon him because he is the son of Joseph, the son of a mere carpenter who makes his living using his hands in a village of no account. They remind each other that this man, Jesus, is stepping beyond his station. He's putting on airs interpreting the word of God. He's claiming more honor than is rightfully his, telling them that he, Joseph's son, has fulfilled these words in their hearing. Earlier, Jesus had announced what his ministry would be: good news to the poor, the captive, the blind, the oppressed, and the debtors. Now he explains who will receive the good news. He says, hey, remember those great prophets, Elijah and Elisha? They are heroes of our faith. They responded to the call of God to help people, and do you remember which people they helped? Not the children of Israel. Not our ancestors. No, Elijah and Elisha helped a Gentile woman on the verge of starvation, and then the foreign commander of the foreign army. And I'm going in that direction too. Modern observers of human behavior would say that what Jesus does next is healthy differentiation. He doesn't play to the crowd. He doesn't humble himself, but he does explain himself, and in so doing, he intentionally provokes the crowd. He pokes the bear. So arrogant do they find his words, so dishonoring of his Nazarene roots, that the crowd flies into a rage, chases Jesus out of town, and tries to throw him off a cliff. Now, what about his words were so infuriating that they would want to kill him? Is it that he dishonored them? Is it that he dared to proclaim that God's love stretched far wider than they imagined? Is it his intentional inclusion of those on the outside of accepted boundaries? The question of what we do with the other is a persistent one. We cannot escape the other, whether it's the new kid who shows up to school in the middle of the year, or the stranger who dares to sit in our pew, or the refugee who comes to the border looking for asylum from war or violence. The other is the one who doesn't look like us, who worships a different God or no God at all. The other is the one whose language we cannot understand, whose politics we find abhorrent, or whose life choices are incomprehensible to us. The other is the unknown, and therefore, the other is a little scary and may even be dangerous. We're hardwired in our amygdala brains to distrust that which we don't recognize. And in modern time, it's interesting because we get real-time pictures and video of the other. We can watch faithful Muslims answer the call of the muezzin and drop to their knees in prayers that we don't understand, and because we don't pray that way, it seems strange to us. We see parents who are seeking asylum being willing to expose their children to smoke bombs and tear gas and wonder if it really can be that bad at home that they would risk that. We watch refugees land in inflatable rafts on the shores of Greek islands, or we see pictures of refugees who drowned trying to leave. We can't even imagine what it's like to be faced with two impossible choices. What do you and I do when faced with the others? People we don't recognize, people who are so different from us that we can't imagine ever finding common ground with them. Our reptilian brain would warn us against them, would say that what we don't recognize may be dangerous, and so we need to be on our guard. We turn people away, and we make ourselves so safe. But we do not live by reptilian brains alone. We have these frontal cortexes, as my friend Debbie likes to remind me, this part of our brain that oversees executive function and helps us to set aside knee-jerk fear. We have minds that can reason and understand complex things. So sometimes when we're confronted with the other, we replace fear with curiosity. We learn about these people and begin to understand why they make the choices they make. Maybe we study their religion. Maybe we learn to speak their language. The stranger becomes an acquaintance. We have brains. We have hearts, too, and souls, and our hearts and souls have yet another response to the other, to the stranger. Who is this person? And does God care for them, too? It may well be that the people who heard Jesus speak in the synagogue in Nazareth that day did not want to believe that God cared for the foreigner and the Gentile. Maybe that's what enraged them, that they themselves were not uniquely chosen and loved. But I think there's good news in this story of the expanse of God's love. Maybe the Nazarenes didn't understand the nature of the love of God. It wasn't finite. It isn't finite. It's not that God only has so much love to give or a limited amount of grace, so more for someone else means less for me. If the message of God's love is to grow, and if Jesus is going to be able to expand his ministry and reach more people, that will mean breaking barriers and going beyond the usual walls and setting aside old assumptions. The ancient prophets Elijah and Elisha reaching beyond their borders and Jesus reaching out beyond what was socially acceptable did not deplete the reservoir of God's love. Luke tells us that in the course of his ministry, Jesus did take care of his own in Capernaum, indeed in every village of Galilee and Judea. And then he healed the servant of a Roman centurion. He forgave a sinful woman. He exorcised a demon from a Gerasene, a Gentile. He told a parable about a good Samaritan. He touched people who were ritually unclean. You get the point. No one was unworthy. Every person was worthy of God's love and Jesus' healing, and that meant that Jesus would need to upset a few apple carts and a few religious purists in order to fulfill his ministry and show God's love. Now, of course, you and I already know that God's love is infinite and that God's grace has no boundaries. We know that and we relish it, especially when we think about ourselves and those who are dear to us. But let's admit that sometimes even the most wise and faithful among us might get a hitch in their get-along when it comes to expanding that love and grace to the other. That's when we rely on our high-functioning brains that help us temper our flight or fight responses. That's when we rely on our faithful hearts to help us see the other not as a stranger or an enemy, but as our neighbor. You might not recognize this name, Hamdi Ulukaya, but I'm pretty sure you've heard of his product, Chobani yogurt. Ulukaya came to the U.S. as a student with a visa and $3,000, and now he runs a billion-dollar business in Twin Falls, Idaho. In an interview with the New York Times, he talked about his life and his company. He said, "I'm from the eastern part of Turkey. It's Colorado weather there, snow, mountains, and then a beautiful spring. I grew up with shepherds. We were nomads. We would go up in the mountains with herds of sheep and goats and cows and make yogurt and cheese and then come back in the winter to the village. There was this sense of being part of community that gave us so much security and safety. We grew up not worrying about anything because basically money didn't mean much because in the mountains you couldn't buy anything with it. If a wolf attacked your herds and you lost all of your sheep, each family would bring one, and the next day you would have all your sheep back." That childhood experience would inform how Ulukaya created his company. He pays at least twice the minimum wage because, as he says, "One of my first dreams was to make this company a place where everybody's a partner, and they deserved a portion of what they have helped build. So I made a calculation. If you make $7 or $8 or $9 an hour, you can't have a house. You can't have good food for your kids. Forget going on vacation. The math just doesn't make sense." And I looked at it from a bigger perspective, especially for rural communities. I don't see any other way of finding a long-term solution than businesses stepping up for their own employees and especially for their own communities. We have to start worrying about our own employees, their families, and their children's well-being, and the school, and the firehouse, and the baseball field. And taking care of his own isn't enough. Himself an immigrant, Ulukaya made a commitment to hiring refugees. Though he's now in Idaho, he began his business in New York, and he says, "When I lived in Utica, and I heard that there were these people being settled in Utica from different parts of the world, and one of the biggest issues they have is finding jobs. So I said, okay, let's find a solution to this thing. I love this guy. I'm gonna go buy some Chobani today." He says, "Okay, let's find a solution to this thing." So we start hiring them, and these are hardworking people. They've gone through a lot. There are now people from 19 different countries working at Chobani. It's like the United Nations there. Now, because every action has an equal and opposite reaction, there have been false claims and Islamophobia directed at Ulukaya, but he has persevered, and his company and the town of Twin Falls, Idaho, have thrived. It's a great story about people reaching beyond the usual borders. Now, I can't imagine any of us here feels called to start a yogurt company, and that's really not the point of sharing this story, but I tell you that to remind you that already there are people and organizations doing the work of caring for the outsider, caring for refugees and immigrants, caring for kids who are bullied at school, caring for those whose illness of body, mind, or spirit separates them from community. And I think we're called to come alongside those who are doing that work, and whether we say it out loud to them or not, we know that the love of Jesus compels us to reach out further and further, to live out the truth that God's love has no bounds. Sure, people will react, but remember, love defies so many things, even Newton's third law, to the glory of God.